Welcome back to the Hardball Gets podcast, proudly brought to you by the brand new Mazda BT50. It's the complete package. Today, we're getting closer to finding out which teams are the complete package as we wrap up all things from the AFL's round three on the Monday Mad Scramble. Let's get into it. Well, we're starting to get a better idea of what's real and what's fake in season 2021, and that's good news for West Coast and Sydney. And bad news for Freo and Luke Shuey. My name's Chris Robinson, and joining me on today's Monday Mad Scramble to dissect not only the AFL, but all things lower level footy in WA, is the West Australians Bush and Burbs guru, Jordan McArdle. Geordie, how are you, mate?
Good, mate. Good to be here. I feel like I'm turning into a bit of a gun for hire at the moment. I've subbed in for the Duff and Quarters pod a couple of times this year, and now I'm here with yourself. So good to finally be here on a Monday.
Would you say you're the voice of Seven West Media at this point?
Nah, I'm probably about...
on par with Dennis and Baz?
Probably about 15th or 16th in line.
Okay, it's very hard to win from outside the top 15 or 16 in the AFL. You're probably a little bit behind at this point. What'd you make of the weekend of footy, mate? You got right around the grounds, not only watching AFL from the comfort of your lounge room, but also getting out to some waffle venues to see the return of waffle footy and also some of the best kids running around as well.
Yeah, it was great to have waffle footy back. A great Easter weekend to do it. Started all on Good Friday with Peel against East Freo down in Mandurah. And Freo fans, if they wanted some light at the end of the tunnel after this weekend, Sam Sturt's probably it. He kicked 5 goals on Good Friday. I think he had 4 by about halfway through the second quarter. So he was unbelievable for Peel, who nearly came away with a win. East Freo were too strong there in the end. I was at Fremantle Oval on Saturday, watched South Freo, the reigning champs, who what an entrance it was for the premiership flag. They bought it in a chopper. So if anyone, yeah, their ball legend for this year, a Sandover medalist from the 80s, Craig Edwards. He came out of the chopper with the premiership flag and walked onto Fremantle Oval. So I thought it was a great way to start the season. I'm not sure about the budget. If it's blown South Freo's budget or out, I'm guessing a helicopter
just missed
isn't
a chance
cheap.
To sign another player just for the
I think
flag
so,
entrance.
Yeah. So,
did the fans know what was going? Was that kind of previously announced, or did some fans think, is this an emergency landing for the hospital next door, or did people sort of know what was going on?
I don't think so. It was one of those ones where I only got told myself probably about 15, 20 minutes before. So it was kind of cool to find out. So, with only 20 minutes or so. I think it might have delayed the game as well a little bit. So it was an interesting way to start the season. And, it was a great game of footy, actually. Matty Parker, we're talking mature age recruits for mid-season draft. He looks good to go, and got to speak with him after the game. And, he seems like he's got a real point to prove to St Kilda that he was worthy of another year on their list, or, another shot in the AFL. So watch this space with Matty Parker.
Yeah, we'll touch on St Kilda a little bit later and on the waffle a little bit later, but certainly could have used him this weekend, Matty Parker, the way that the Saints went. Mate, let's start with Freo from yesterday, because it's still fresh in our minds. I'm sure it's still fresh in the minds of our listeners. It wasn't good. They were irresistible the week before. They would have sucked a lot of people in tipping-wise and betting-wise yesterday against the Carlton side, who we're not quite sure about, still not sure if they're any good even after yesterday. But Fremantle made the bright start and then just got absolutely hammered from sort of late in that first quarter to midway through the third quarter. What did you make of what Freo put up yesterday? Obviously no Nat Fyfe, we know that. We know how important he is, but the way that they performed yesterday, you can lose on the road, but to lose on the road in that kind of manner is a bit different, isn't it?
That was bad, wasn't it? Mm. They barely put up a fight other than their bright start, and then it just got ugly really, really quickly. I mean, there wasn't a great deal of positives you can take out of that. I mean, Heath Chapman looked okay. I think he was one of the sort of shining lights there down back, but there wasn't much else to write home about. They got absolutely beaten up in the midfield by Paddy Cripps. I'm guessing they would have liked to have had Nat Fyfe out there, another big body in that mid. But it was a tough one. Like, Fife's been out before, but the kids have really shone in those sort of games, or at least given fans something. But there was nothing there really. They were, yeah, left out to dry as
that's the back page headline.
Yeah, that's right. As Justin Longmuir said, he doesn't get fired up too often, but he was ropeable after the game, and rightly so.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good after the game. Longmuir, you could have pretty easily just written that one and just gone, okay, if you're going to lose, if you're going to have a bad day, you might as well have it all happen in one bad day and sort of scratch it and scrub it and move on to the next one. But I thought he was pretty good speaking candidly about how they let Andy Brayshaw down a bit in that midfield, and he certainly wasn't the only one. Up forward as well, it's been so long since we've seen Freo get monstered by one particular target. And I'll touch on the numbers of this in my stats column a little bit later today for those who go to thewest.com.au. But Harry Mackay kicking 7.5 against Luke Ryan, it was kind of – I watched a throwback game during the week, one of those Fox footy ones with Gary Ablett Sr. just absolutely dominating against Melbourne. And it was against – I think it was Sean White was his opponent – and I sort of, a couple of times you're just like, can this guy just get some help? He's sort of one-on-one in an island against Ablett and just getting no help and not getting switched. It kind of felt a little bit that way, obviously different circumstances, but with Mackay yesterday, it felt like Brennan Cox in his 50th game just kept getting blocked off the ball. And then the next guy to try and stop Mackay was just not big enough. Freo really covered the loss of Hamling and Pierce really well last year. Didn't really get touched up by key forwards, but yesterday that was a real different story, a bit of a worry for Freo with so many guys out down back.
And now they've got another one in Hayden Young. Mm. I mean, hamstrings, what do you give him, three or 4 weeks at best? So yeah, it's another loss, and they just keep losing him down back, which, you know, a month or so ago they looked in great nick. It would look almost a matter of who's going to miss out.
There was the log jam.
It was how are you going to fit 13 blokes into, you know, six or seven defensive spots, but now it's completely the other way around. It's who's above about 190 centimetres that we can throw down back. It's getting pretty ugly on the injury front, unfortunately, for the Dockers. At the other end of the ground, I think it's time to give Josh Tracy a game. I saw him a couple of weeks ago in that pre-season game against Claremont, and he looked way too good for that level. He kicked 7 goals and looked like Wayne Carey more than Josh Tracy. So fingers crossed that he gets a debut, because I think it's well deserved. And I think that the Hawks back line, they've also got Hawthorn up next at home. I think the Hawks back line's quite under strength as well from memory. So could be one of those ones where, you know, Tabiner and Tracy combine for those, that real kind of Twin Towers kind of vibe.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd like to see it. I wasn't too – there was a bit on social media and a bit around after the game about Tracy not getting a game yesterday. I wasn't too disappointed about that, given that they'd been so good the week before, had so many forward entries, so many marks. I think they had 22 or 24 marks inside 50 against the Giants. They had just a ton of supply. So you could see why they were reluctant to make too many changes to a winning team. And then also, I guess, being mindful of blooding debutants in three consecutive games to open up the season with Meek and Chapman before that. So I didn't particularly mind it. I think after yesterday, you probably do look to make that change. And Sam Sturt as well, who you touched on off the top. For Freo fans who wouldn't know too much about Sam Sturt, he kicked 3 on debut against Essendon in round 1 last year, just before COVID hit, or just as COVID was hitting, which seems like a lifetime ago. Tell us what Sam Sturt brings if he is a potential inclusion this week.
He's that kind of mid-size forward. So he's still quite slightly built, but he's put on a little bit of size since he arrived at the club. But his work rate up the ground's really good. He's got a lovely left foot on him. Like some of the strikes on Friday were just beautiful to watch. And
yep.
He just doesn't seem fazed by the bigger sort of stage as well. I mean, you look at his debut against Essendon pre-COVID. Did he get Rising Star?
Rising Star nomination.
Yeah, that's
debut,
right.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
And he nearly won him the game there, didn't he? He was,
they came right back at the end.
And that contested mark against Michael Hurley, I think it was. Like he was playing on defenders, you know, giving up kilos, giving up centimetres, and yeah, he was taking some nice clunks there. So he's almost a mid-size that can probably punch above his weight a little bit as well. So yeah, I think that we should see him this week. I don't see why not. I'm guessing there's going to be a few, not only force changes with Young and Lachie Schultz, who obviously got that concussion. So there's your 12 days out for him. So there's two automatic outs there as well. And I'm guessing there's going to be a few more under the gun after a performance like that, which was the biggest loss under Justin Longmuir, which says a lot, 45 points.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's I certainly don't think it's all doom and gloom for Freo. I think they'll take care of the Hawks over here. And then the two after that, they've got Adelaide in Adelaide, which is the Crows are much improved, but that's still a road game that is half winnable for Freo. And then the Kangaroos after that. So I think heading into the derby in round seven, there'll be 3-3 at worst. They might be 4-2, which would certainly change the script in terms of how Freo fans are feeling right now. West Coast against your boys, Port Adelaide on Saturday night. Eagles just punched him in the mouth earlier. They just made a statement and really just snuffed out any sort of chance that the Power had. Luke Shuey, his ability to set the tone and his importance to that engine room is so pivotal. And that was going around in one of my group chats early in the game. And then Shuey got injured and that's, the rest is history. But he's still so important to what they do in that engine room, particularly without Elliot Yeo still there. Particularly with Elliot Yeo still on the sidelines, as I should say. How much of a loss is Shuey potentially for the Eagles as they plot forward over the coming 5, 6, 7 weeks?
Oh, it's huge. You only have to look back to the week before when they were up against the Bulldogs and they got monstered in the midfield there. It's just, they've got a couple of young kids sort of coming through in the midfield, like Xavier O'Neill's probably the next one up again. He got dropped to the Waffle at the weekend and
bounced back well.
And Zane True as well. He showed a little bit on Saturday against
his numbers
were
really good.
Definitely. He's obviously a first year player, but he's got that bigger body already. He looks quite strong and physically ready to go. So I think they will go Xavier O'Neill there, but they've certainly got another in Zane True, who I think is going to be an absolute bargain as a rookie draftee. So they can probably thank Peter Sumich for that for calling him a sook, I think it was. So, yeah, that ruined his national draft night, I think, but he at least got picked up in the rookie draft. So I think, yeah, there's a couple there, but it's quite hard to replace a Luke Shuey. He's a captain, he's a big game player and just such a reliable contributor for a long time. So, yeah, it's tough for Shuey, isn't it? He's had so many soft tissue injuries in the past 12 months and he was just absolutely shattered as well. He knew straight away that he'd done something and just knows that, you know, it's probably another month at least on the sideline, which is – it's. Yeah, real sour note to such a strong performance from the Eagles. They just did everything right, didn't they? And for Shuey to come off with about, it wouldn't have been long left in the game.
Yeah, it was sort of 8 or 9 minutes left, I think.
Yeah, so he's probably got the 3 Brownlow votes as well. So
yeah, should do.
Yeah, so it was just a real shame to end the game like that. And a couple of nice moments at post-game, him and Travis spoke and Hamish Hartler both came up to him and had a real long chat just to see how he was. I thought that was pure class after a tough loss for Port.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one of the problems that Shuey's got, approaching 31, obviously, with the soft tissue stuff, and he's not like a – there'd be some positions on the ground where you could – potentially nurse someone back and sort of change the style that they play a little bit, whereas Shuey kind of only has one way. He just goes 100% and is just that real grunt in the engine room and that explosive pace. So
it's a worry, I guess. How many times do you do these injuries before you start losing faith in your body that you can bounce back again and that it's not going to happen again? So
how are your hamstrings these days?
They're always.
Can you sympathise with a couple of
a little bit? Mine are a bit longer than 3 to 4. Where I think they just, I just play cricket with one hamstring now, really. So, but I probably don't have the work rate of a Luke Shuey. I think or the discipline. So
it's the main thing holding you back.
I think
from the
so. Yeah, but I think Simo did flag that he was going to play Shuey a little bit more up forward, but that never really eventuated, did it?
Yeah, I think, as I say, you've just got to use him where he's just so good, and he's still just one of the most damaging clearance guys, particularly that synergy he has with Nat Nui, who's just such a unique. We saw again on Saturday night how crafty he is and the synergy that he has with a handful of those guys in the guts. And the Nat Nui-Shui combo is absolutely A1 in that midfield. So West Coast will definitely miss that.
I was going to say, could they use Brander as an inside mid? He did trial a couple of times in waffle scratch matches for West Coast, and he was probably best on one of those two games, if not both. So that could be a sort of a left field option. Could they throw him in there rather than using a...
Potentially, yeah. Brander was our next point here. The breakout game that so many Eagles fans have been wanting to see from him. Real easy to forget that he was drafted before Oscar Allen and made his debut before Oscar Allen for the Eagles, but has just never really come on. Wasn't even in the 22 going into Saturday. It was a late replacement for Brendan Archie, and then came in, played really well, 21 touches, hit the scoreboard, including his first career goal, and they got around him for that. Really gave him that drive across wing and half forward. I can't remember if he had a centre bounce attendance on Saturday night. I don't recall seeing him in there. That's not to say that he wasn't, but it will be interesting to see whether they favour the likes of O'Neill going back in there for a few and Duggan in a little bit more as well. Andrew Gaff was probably in there a little bit more as well on Saturday night. But certainly Brander is a guy after that performance on Saturday to put his hand up for an increased role in that department.
I think so, yeah. It's been a frustrating few years for Brander since he's arrived. He's been trialled in so many positions. It was more a victim of circumstance, wasn't it? They thought he was the best available pick when they got him in the draft, I guess, but they just never really had a proper role for him. So it was quite tough, but I think he's at least shown a little bit on the wing and across half forward, like you mentioned. So that's good to see. He made the most of his opportunity as a late inclusion, and let's hope for Eagles fans that he gets a bit more continuity in his game, and this could be the year for him.
So the Saints coming up for the Eagles this week on the road. St Kilda, the absolute far and away biggest losers. Unless Geelong gets rolled by Hawthorn this afternoon, St Kilda easily the biggest loser of the weekend. So they're going to have all sorts of pressure on them, St Kilda. We talked about, I was on the 2 minute warning Hardball Gets podcast last week with Xavier and Rhino, and I had St Kilda, and I pretty much glossed over last weekend's game as a preview in terms of Essendon. I said the next three after that, where they've got West Coast and then Richmond and then Port Adelaide, that's where we're going to see what the Saints are made of. Forget this weekend against the VFL side in Essendon. So for them to not only lose that, but to lose that by 75, to get absolutely belted, all sorts of pressure on St Kilda this week. Jade Gresham goes out as well, who's an important part of what they do. Is it possible that we've all overrated the Saints? I mean, where did you have the Saints in your preseason predictions if you cast your mind back? I'm sure they would have been in your eight somewhere.
I've forgotten the exact position, which I'm hoping most punters have forgotten where I've put them as well, because I think I did have them around that, 4, 5, 6 sort of mark. So,
yeah
that's
I think
looking,
that's fair. I think that was a consensus kind of area, right?
It felt like it, yeah, just with they had a really good year last year, and I thought they looked primed to just take that next step. But that was embarrassing, wasn't it? Against Essendon, who probably alongside Freo have the longest injury list in the competition. They're dropping like flies at the moment. They lost three key players the week before, and it just looked like a matter of how much.
And weren't that strong to begin with, right? Like, you can be decimated by injury, but if you're already one of the poorer lists going around, that's just a horrible loss for St Kilda. I think they beat GWS in round one up there, and we were probably a little bit impressed by that. That's probably shifted a bit now, given where we're seeing GWS after that loss to Freo last week, and then they were better against Melbourne yesterday, but they're 0-3. But they've got some serious issues. On the Essendon side of things, Alec Waterman, the big story from a WA point of view, so good to get to see the WA kid get his chance. You'd like to think that he will continue to get his chance in that team for the rest of the season, given where Essendon are rebuilding and given how good he was. 2-2 from 12 touches, playing the whole year, right, Jordy?
Absolutely, yeah. I've been a huge fan of Alec Warden for a very long time. I've watched him at Waffle level, and you know, I've had the chance to speak with him before. I remember the last time I actually interviewed him, he was working, you know, casually at a pizza shop. He was still sort of feeling the effects from glandular fever, which sort of wiped out his first stint in the AFL, and you know, he was struggling to get up some days. It was just sapping his energy that much. So it was really sad to see it. But yeah, this is one of the moments that his first goal in AFL footy, that was special. Awesome. That was probably the moment of the weekend.
Yeah, just about.
Mine. Yeah, yep. it was great to see him get a game, but for him to grab it with both hands, two goals too from 12 touches, as you said, and a nice Gatorade shower. His first game as an AFL footballer, to think he was drafted 6.5 years ago, the 2014 National Draft. So the same draft as Liam Duggan. So Liam Duggan's 100-plus game player at West Coast, a premiership player. Think about how many special moments Duggan's enjoyed in his career, and that was Alec Waterman's first. So, proud moment for Alec Waterman and the Waterman family. So that was special to see.
Did you get the sense in any of your chats with him over the past few years? I know it's you have to sort of say the right thing, and you're confident that your career can still progress and you can find the opportunity. Did you get the sense that he thought it had completely passed him by in terms of an AFL? Getting an AFL crack, another AFL crack?
In a way, yes. I actually spoke with him over the phone about a story I did about Joel Weston, because he actually, while he was sort of playing hiatus was happening, he actually coached a little bit at junior level. He coached Joel Weston, which was a pretty cool story.
Though. Yeah, great story,
Got drafted in the space of a couple of months. Yep. But he didn't really want to talk about himself too much. He was more keen to talk about Joel Weston's hopes of making his AFL, you know, dream a reality and that sort of thing. I guess he didn't want to get too excited about it in case it didn't happen. And that was actually before the national draft. So that was another heartbreak for him. He obviously didn't get picked up there, despite he did get quite a lot of interest from Essendon and a few others. So it was quite nice for it to happen the way it did in that pre-season supplementary period, where he was actually his flights were booked home. So it was another setback. He thought
it's a great story. Isn't it
really
There's
is.
There's a lot of wrinkles to this story.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. His bags were packed. He was actually, I think, having a few sort of farewell drinks with the Essendon players.
Yeah.
When he got a message from, I think it was his manager, Paul Pios, to say, you know, hold your horses, mate. Stay in Melbourne. You're going to potentially get another chance to showcase your abilities. And it was the game he kicked 4 goals, I think it was. So, yeah what a turn in fortunes that was in the space of a week. So, yeah, you talk about a roller coaster 6.5 years. It was a roller coaster week leading up to that. Mm. So, yeah, that was, an amazing effort after everything he's been through.
Be a good behind the scenes doco if anyone's been following Alec Waterman with a camera over the past few years. Another WA boy that you know very intimately, Chad Warner, the talk of Sydney's performance, well, Sam Wicks was pretty damn good as well with his 3 goals too, but Chad Warner going through the middle, shrugging off tackles to kick goals. I mean, this kid was electric, really did sort of put the highlight stamp on everything that Sydney did at the G against Richmond. So round one, Sydney goes up and beats Brisbane. There's a few funky things that happen in round one. Brisbane were probably a bit flat. We go, okay, Sydney's exciting. Round two, they do what they need to do with Buddy Yin and they beat Adelaide. But this was a statement win from Sydney. This is a win where it's like, okay, this isn't just a team that's started well and, you know, is going to start plotting its way up the ladder. To be able to dust Richmond at the MCG on a Saturday afternoon, holy smokes. And Chad Warner, I mean, what's so special about this kid? We've talked a bit about Golden so far this year, and also Logan McDonald, another WA kid. But what did you see from Warner, and what have you seen from Warner following him as a junior in the past couple of years to suggest that he's on the up and up?
He's just an absolute beast and a real workhorse in that as well, Chad Warner. He's a very popular sort of player, and yeah, just one of those guys who you thought, yeah, he could make that next step. I didn't know if it would be so soon. It's obviously his second year in the AFL, and he showed glimpses of it in his first year, but wow, that was a real statement performance, not only from Sydney, but for Chad Warner. So could we see, it'd be Warner or Wicks. Has Wicks played too many to get the Rising Star?
This is a question that was posed during the broadcast, and I didn't actually look up the answer as to how many Sam Wicks has played and how old he is. I thought he might have been just out of range, but I might be wrong on that. Hopefully Warner can pip him anyway, because his game was just terrific in his own right.
So a couple of Aquinas boys getting it done for Sydney in Logan McDonald and Chad Warner. So they obviously would have played a little bit of footy together themselves at PSA level a couple of years ago. So that's a little bit of a story in itself. But I think if you said an Aquinas College kid was going to get a Rising Star knob in the first few rounds, you'd say it was going to be Logan McDonald, but Chaddy might have pipped him so far.
Yep, I think McDonald would be very happy about that as long as Sydney can stay unbeaten.
But on Logan, he got not a record of his own, but I think the first since Pavlich, was it, to get multiple goals in the first three games of his career?
I saw that floating on Twitter somewhere. Was that our friend Swamp on Twitter?
I think so, yeah. Love a good Swampy tweet.
If you ever see a good stat on Twitter and you're not sure who it is, it's probably Swamp. The next crop as far as the WA kids coming through. So talk to me about Waffle Colts from the weekend, because it was the return of Waffle Colts. Footy stream live at thewest.com.au for those interested. You watched the Dogs and the Falcons before the seniors. That was the game you were at, wasn't it?
I was at Fremantle Oval.
Cool. Who sort of caught your eye, not only amongst that game, but in terms of the next WA crop coming through? Chuck us a couple of names that the punters can keep an eye on ahead of this year's draft.
Well, the words caught my eye probably is about fair. I've mentioned a kid with a bright blue helmet and a kid with the M&M peroxide do, so maybe that's why they caught my eye. But no, Zach Flanner, I'll start with him. It was a losing side, but he showed a lot off half back for West Perth. He's got the bright blue tealy kind of helmet. There's not much of him. He's quite slightly sort of built still, but he just loves a long run off defence. So I really rate that. He takes on the opponent, and he kicked a beautiful goal from long range as well. Took a couple of bounces and just went bang from about 50, 55 metres with the left boot. So he's certainly one to watch for West Perth fans. I think he showed plenty. I think he's not draft age till next year as well. So still another year.
Right.
So that's always pretty exciting. Aaron Drage, I really liked his performance. He's the Slim Shady lookalike in the South Freo midfield. He's quite a strong body and won a heap of clearances and was quite clean by foot as well, going inside 50. And another kid we talk quite a lot about is Jesse Motlop. He kicked a couple of goals, but he kicked goal of the day. He showed plenty on Saturday. And for Fremantle fans, if they don't know, he's obviously part of their Next Generation Academy. So the only worry for them is whether he puts in that good of a season and goes in that, it's called the protected zone. So other clubs can, it used to be they could bid for a player sort of wherever, but and the club that the Next Generation Academy was tied to could match it, which it would cost him a little bit, but in this case, if he does go in the top 20 to a rival club, at Fremantle can't match it. So I think they'll be hoping he has a good season,
Just slow down a bit.
two goals. He spent most of his time up forward, but a little bit of time in the midfield as well, as was flagged by his Colts coach in Larry Cavallo. So nice start there for South Freo. I think both of those two teams are going to be right up there when the whips are cracking. Another couple of players out of East Freo who performed really well, a game I wasn't at on Good Friday, was Jack Williams. He's rated among the top few draft prospects in WA this year. He's an athletic type who can play. He started as a defender, and then he's been moved forward. He kicked four goals, and he actually had a little bit of a stint in the ruck as well, 15 hitouts.
Jack of all trades headlines.
Yes,
coming
exactly right.
And fast.
I did think of that on Friday when I saw that. So great minds think alike. And another out of East Freo is Josh Brown. He's a big bodied mid who showed a lot as a bottom major last year. I think he ended up with 26 and two goals there. So couple to watch out for there. In the seniors, Jacob Van Ruin, I've spoken about him quite a bit the last few months, he made his league debut for Claremont. So it's a tough side to get into. And, yeah, to do that as a 17-year-old turning
That's a great effort 18, yeah, for a side that lost the GF by a kick last year, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I guess they did lose a couple of forwards in Tom Lee retired, Alec Waterman obviously got drafted to Essendon. But, yeah, two goals two on debuts, a handy performance there from Van Ruin.
Well, mate, we'll keep you on the draft theme as we head into a little segment we like to call Over Under.
Over? Nah. Under.
And so we're looking for draft night this year. So the main AFL draft. So there were, correct me if I'm wrong, there were 10 guys, 10 WA guys who went on draft night last year from WA. Is that right? Have I got my maths right there?
Yeah.
Just on the actual night itself and then the...
So I think I used the kicker perfect 10.
Yeah, there you go. This is just becoming a recap of some of your greatest headlines.
I'm much better at writing kickers than I am stories, I think, at the moment. So
the number for your first over-under is 10.5. So 10.5 for WA players to be taken on this year's draft night. So basically, can we beat our haul from last year's crop? 10.5 players over-under for this year.
I think the crop's actually not expected to be as strong as it was last year.
Okay.
I think, so I think 10 would be a great result for this year for WA. You've got four almost certainties in Jacob Van Ruin and Jack Williams. I've mentioned those two already. Rhett Bazo, the son of late Swan Districts champion Steve Bazo.
Good Guildford boy.
Yeah, Guildford grammar boy. So he'll switch his time between Swan Districts and Guildford this year. He plays his best footy as an intercept marking defender, as he showed last year at Guildford, but Simon Bergen's actually thrown him up forward this year. I think he had a bag of about four or five in one of the Pracky games.
Okay.
And he kicked 2-4 at the weekend, so it was one of those almost sort of games for him. So he's another one that's in the AFL Academy. The fourth and final WA member of the AFL Academy this year is Matt Johnson. So he's a quite a tall midfielder out of Subiaco. He had some quad issues over the preseason, so he didn't actually play round one. But before that, he was well in the mix to make his senior debut in round one. So, yeah, he's another one to watch out for. But there's probably, you could throw a blanket over the next sort of 5-10 guys, I reckon. There's, in that mid-range kind of bracket. So, yeah, obviously a lot depends on how they go this season, but you'd nearly lock away those four, and then you'd hope maybe five or six more out of the crop.
So probably more in that 9 to 10 range, just sneaking in the under there.
I think so. Yeah, there's some amazing bottom ages coming through. So I think next year is going to be a really strong crop. But this year might be that little bit of a lull in between two really strong years.
Okay, your second number for over under is 2.5. And I thought long and hard about this line. So this is for North Melbourne wins this entire AFL season. I thought about 1.5, given how just absolutely horrible they were on Good Friday. I decided to bump it up to 2.5. Tell me if that you think that's generous or not. Are you taking over under?
Yeah, that's generous.
You don't think they're getting to three wins?
I don't know where they're next.
It's a worry, isn't it?
From.
They were real bad on Friday. They were real bad, and it was almost made worse by the fact that Brent Harvey, I don't know if you saw the halftime show, which was Brent Harvey up against Brad Johnson kicking goals to raise money for the Good Friday appeal for sick kids, which is terrific. But Brent Harvey, who's a Kangaroos runner, looks absolutely jacked and looks every part of a guy who would still be in the top 10, maybe the top half dozen players at North Melbourne. Considering he hasn't played AFL footy in half a decade, that was almost made to look even worse than North Melbourne's performance. They were just absolutely nowhere on Friday.
Well, they haven't really recovered since then, have they? Was it the year where Harvey, Petrie, Ferrito,
lost a few.
Del Santo, and I only remember that just because of the footy show skit that they did, they did that One Direction history song.
Oh, okay.
And it was pretty well played, actually. So I guess they saw the funny
stuff. Some of the stuff that sticks in your head never ceases to amaze me.
Yeah, it is quite odd, isn't it? I think that is generous.
So you don't think they can get to three? I feel like I'd probably still take the over. And I know that is a long way away when you'd think, how hard is it for them to get one win from here, let alone three? I just feel like they're going to get a day potentially where they have Hawthorn. Maybe they won't get to three. Maybe I'm talking myself out of it here. They even the injury list that they flashed up, now that I think about it, where it's kind of like the who's missing on Good Friday.
There's not many, is there?
There's not that many big names. There was probably eight or nine names. Robbie Tarrant was about the best of them, and Luke McDonald, who I think won their best and fairest last year. But outside of that, the guys like Dom Tyson, I think Sean Attlee might be one of them. They're just kind of middling sort of players. I feel like they'll get to two. I don't think they're going to be 1-21. I feel like they'll get to two and they might sneak a third. I'll take the over there. I know it looks horrible at the moment, but I think they'll find a way to get to three.
Putting my WA hat on, though, I think they missed a trick in not drafting Logan McDonald. He was on the board and they went for Will Phillips instead.
And that's going to become more and more a talking point as the year goes on, right?
I think so, yeah. They needed that big forward to kind of build their future around, and Logan McDonald is exactly that.
And you can sell it a bit more, can't you? If it's a good strapping key forward, like you can just sell it to your members, and it's not all about members with North Melbourne. I feel like that storyline gets played over a little bit too much, but
the members / Tasmania.
Yeah, but it's like, putting that stuff aside, like it's a building block that you can build around for the next, dozen years. I feel like that's going to potentially become more and more a talking point as the year goes on. And your last over-under is 0.5. I thought this one might appeal to you just as a raging South Fremantle fan. 0.5 Waffle Premiership wins for South Freo this year, as in, are they the team to beat as of right now? Would you take South Freo or would you take the field if you were given the option? 0.5 for South Freo Premiership wins. Are you going to take the over?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, of course.
I think South Freo could win more grand finals than North Melbourne could win games this year. So, I think if you look at their side, they were obviously the dominant side in the competition last year. You add Matty Parker to that mix. Cam McCarthy, not so much. I wasn't very impressed with him. I'm sure he will bounce back. But, yeah, just I think three or four touches at the weekend. So he was very quiet. Yeah. But another one who hasn't been talked about as much as Blake Schlensog.
I really wanted you to say that name rather than me. It's a hard one to spell. It's even harder to say.
It doesn't roll off the tongue that smoothly, which is hard when I was obviously doing the live stream at the weekend and he got a heap of intercept marks as well. So
just go Blake.
Thank you to my co-commentator, Joel Saratsis, for jumping in there.
No, he was Joel Saratsis. He's a great caller.
He's terrific.
Certainly carried you throughout that broadcast.
Absolutely, yeah. He sort of just jumped in for Skate usually, who carries me most Saturday mornings during the Colts. So, he was terrific, I felt. Like his disposal lacked a little bit of polish. He looked a tad rushed at times, but he's a big lad and he reads the play quite well and continually got in the right spots in that as well. So plenty to work with there. But, yeah, Matty Parker, they might only have him for half a season the way he's going. Wow. Yeah. So
he's another one of those guys where you just be like, oh, mate, maybe slow down just a little bit. Motlop style.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they're both at South Freo, so they just need to calm down on Jesse Motlop and calm down on Matty Parker. So, yeah, I think they are certainly the team to beat. I think Claremont will be up there again. They obviously had a few sort of off-field issues, I think, leading into it with Hayden Busher leaving, who's huge down back for them. So I actually tipped it to be a South Freo Perth grand final. I know, controversial with Perth, only playing their first sort of final series last year, but I think they've recruited really well on top of what was a real breakout year for them. And just think with the Monkeys finally off their back this year as well. And yeah, I think they'll give it a red hot crack this year.
So there you have it. South Freo to go back to back, according to their number one ticket holder, Jordan McArdle. Mate, we got to let you get out of here. We've got to crack on with our day. Thanks so much for joining us. And you'll be unleashing some Bush and Burbs madness on us later in the week, I trust, potentially.
I think so, yeah. There's been some... Yeah, I'm really excited for the start of the year. You look at some of the recruits that have signed up for some country leagues, and obviously in the AMO, the Perth Footy League for their 100th year. It's going to be a very, very exciting year ahead. I mean, Alex Rance, to have him locked in for a couple of games, May 1 and May 8 for Swan Valley in the C2. So I think there might be a couple of forwards who are going to pull out with general soreness on those two dates. But, yeah, the guys like Harley Bennell, Hayden Ballantyne, they're both going to play for Pinjarra this year. I think Drew Petrie might sneak in a few games for Cottesloe in the Perth Footy League. Aaron Sanderlands is rumoured at potentially playing in the country as well around his sort of AFL coaching commitments at Frio. There's even one game where Ballantyne and Matty Prittis are going to go head-to-head in the country. So I think it was Williams against – I've had a bit of a mind blank now, but it's definitely Williams. I'm hearing Prittis might even play more than the one game for Williams, so that would be pretty cool. He's got a family connection out that way. So.
Okay.
Watch this space. There's going to be some...
Just rack up the lazy 23 clearances and 18 tackles.
I think so, yeah. They're Kiara Bowers-like numbers, the...
Yes, yeah.
So I think, it's a real, real exciting year ahead. That's probably the silver lining in the list cuts from the AFL last year, is that some really exciting talents are coming back to either the Waffle or you know, amateur and country leagues. So, yeah, real exciting year ahead in both the Waffle country leagues and the amateurs as well.
Well, you won't miss a minute of anything. Ammo's country, Waffle Colts, juniors, PSA, Jordan McArdle has it all covered at the West. Geordie, thanks so much for your time today.
No worries, anytime.
And to our listeners, thanks very much to you. And thanks also to our good friends at Mazda and the Mazda BT50. It is the complete package. Don't miss Dill and Zave and the 2-minute warning later in the week. We'll chat to you next Monday.